All right, so Simon.
Got that one.
I'm going to start this one off by playing our little game of Simon Says. Typically, for those of you who are just tuning into the Taxi Squad pod and don't know what this game is, it's a game where I ask Simon a hockey-related question and he struggles to answer, but that's all right, because the point of this game isn't for him to get it right, it's for us to learn something.
Yep.
So yep. Simon, I'm gonna run you through some stats right now. This player has played 140 games at the NCAA
God
level.
Damn it.
For Minnesota State. He has a record.
Oh!
Hey, let me finish.
All right.
113, 20-4 with 26 shutouts, 1.46 goals against average, and a .932 save percentage. And the Leafs just drafted him. Or didn't draft him. They just signed him.
They signed him.
Can you tell me who this player is, Mr. Simon?
I don't know what his first name is. I know his last name is McKay. I think he's... I'm not sure if they announced the Hobie Baker winner, but I think he won the Hobie Baker, goaltender from Minnesota State.
Okay, so at this point, I'm going to shut up now. I'm going to let Steven fill in the blanks. Who is this player?
I don't really like this game because you're putting Simon on the spot so much. And like, I just finished doing a video where I did like an hour's worth of research and everything. But Dryden McKay is the player. And he's the 24-year-old goalie out of Minnesota State. The thing that stands out most about him is that he's got more career shutouts at the NCAA level than he does losses. That's absolutely insane. But obviously there was a story that came out about him over the last couple of weeks where there was a performance-enhancing drug thing involved. But if you read the story from Elliot Friedman on Sportsnet, and I'm going to completely butcher on this because it took me like 20 minutes to get it down in my video. But what happened was, is in like January, he was taking an immune boosting substance to help with COVID recovery because he was going to be the extra guy going over for Team USA at the Olympics. And he just wanted to be ready. And when you're taking different supplements and vitamins, you can read the back of the label with a magnifying glass, but some things just aren't listed. And one of the things that weren't listed on there was a banned substance. And basically he was facing a 4-year suspension and they got that down to 6 months because they were able to prove that he just legitimately didn't know about it. So he'll be able to start the season and take part in training camp with the Maple Leafs next year. And it's an American Hockey League deal. So he'll probably start with the Marlies or the Growlers and we'll see where it goes from there.
So the reason why I brought this topic up, first of all, is because there's like two different sides of this. There's two different groups of people who can respond to the story either positively or negatively, depending on how you look at it. But before we get into that, though, I think all of our listeners, they may be unfamiliar with the new voice that they just heard. This is Downtown Stephen Brown, everyone. Welcome to the podcast.
Yay!
Thank you, guys.
Do you want to intro yourself really quickly? Like, I'll give you like a brief intro and then you can just take the reins after some time. But is it safe to say YouTuber, Twitter personality, pretty much?
Yeah, sure. So something along those lines. I mean, I just finished up a journalism program at Seneca College and I'm going to be starting an internship with TSN Sports Center. So some cool things there. But yeah, mainly you'll find me on YouTube over the last couple of years where I've just been talking about the Leafs mainly as like practicing for school because you could do a lot of stuff live on camera. And then a couple of thousand people just showed up out of nowhere. So that's basically the way that I like to describe it because I was just messing around and just a bunch of people showed up afterwards.
Yeah, just like us, to be honest. How did...
I mean, but like a way higher success rate, but I mean, who's counting, right? So, Steven, like, for those of you who don't really know your content, I know your YouTube channel, like, very well, if you were to kind of describe your content, like, how would you kind of describe it as someone who actually makes your content? Like, I know you're primarily, or it feels like you're primarily a Leaf content creator, but if you had to kind of explain your content, like, how would you describe yourself?
Numbers. I don't like to say anything unless I could back it up with some sort of source, either being a number or a quote or something like that, and that's just the journalism background. But I just also like to be able to say, like, look at this stuff, you know, like, and this is where I'm getting this from. I'm not just kind of talking out my butt or blowing smoke or anything. So that's the main component of the channel. And because I am done school and I will have some more time afterwards, my internship goes from May till August. So in September, starting fresh for 2022-2023, I'm going to look to expand some things because I'm going to have some more time to do deep analytical dives on more than just the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's really, yeah, that's great.
Very cool. Speaking of deep dives into analytical stuff, Simon himself purchased a evolving hockey subscription, right?
I did. That was, yeah, great investment. Great investment.
Yeah, yeah. Because over the last few episodes, we've been taking a little bit of a deeper dive as well into like the nitty gritty numbers, and so he decided it'd be a good idea, and he did that, and I think you do as well. I saw a couple of your YouTube videos recently, and you pulled up some nice charts here and there to describe like, oh, what's the best lineup for the Leafs going to the playoffs. do you really like doing that?
Yeah, I find like a lot of what's missing with charts like that and with numbers. I know that the Evolving Hockey player charts do a really good job of contextualizing things by putting like what type of role a player plays, whether he's playing on the third or fourth line or second line, first line minutes, and the same thing for the D pairings. But it's contextualizing those numbers and saying, okay, is he playing? Yeah, he's playing second line minutes, but he's being fed softer matchups in offensive zone minutes. So I like taking the chart there and then showing something else and going a little bit deeper, showing their most common line mates and other things as well. But it is a really great visual to use for hockey stats because numbers on a page can be overwhelming, especially when you need to have a glossary next to all of them.
Right.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to jump back into Dryden McKay now. If that's all right with you too.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's what I wanted to talk about. So obviously, he just won the Hobey Baker Award this season. And I believe he's only the third goaltender in NCAA history who has won that and has gotten that achievement. I believe the other two, Ryan Miller is one of them.
Jesus.
And I forgot the other name. But it's some really elite company. And some of the recent winners, I think it includes Jack Eichel, Johnny Gaudreau, Jimmy Vesey. But still, like, it's rare that a goalie would ever achieve that. So his, I have his Twitter thread pulled up. So he posted this on April 18th. I'm going to quickly run through it. I'm going to ask you two for your thoughts after this. So this is directly from Dryden McKay. I would like to officially respond to the press release regarding US ADA's announcement of my 6-month sanction. In early January, the NHL made a decision not to send its players to the Olympics. And then shortly after, they announced a roster of college and other non-NHL players. So I'm going to summarize quickly here. Basically, he was part of that list. He wasn't announced publicly, but he was supposed to, he was told to prepare to go to Beijing. And in the process of doing that, he took some, I believe, his nutritionist or his trainer told him to take some vitamin D supplements, one of which was he described as an all-natural contaminated non-NSF vitamin D3 immune booster. So that's his terminology for it. And he took it for a span of 10 days to basically boost his immune amidst the Omicron wave of COVID. So he was undergoing this, he was taking the supplement, and then during the process of preparing for Beijing, he had to undergo some lab testing. In the testing, urine sample discovered that basically a trillionth of a gram of this substance called Substance X for now. I'm going to put it up later on. Basically, it's on the banned list though. You can't use it. And he didn't know, and I believe his nutritionist or his trainer didn't know either, that this was on the list of banned substances. But his argument was, this was so small, there was no way it could have given him any sort of performance-enhanced edge over any of his fellow athletes. And so he appealed it. I believe the NCAA, they allowed him to continue playing out the rest of the season, and they said that we're going to go back to this case later on. After the season was over, I believe he made it to the Frozen Four in the NCAA tournament. Then season was over, they went back to the case, and then they recently gave him the 6-month sanction. And he accepted it now with the, I guess, the belief that he's going to go play again once the season resumes in October, probably for the Leafs and the Marlies. So that's the summary of it right now. There's two camps. One camp is there's no way that you would have known, considering that, you know, COVID was going on and Omicron was going on, and you're just trying to boost your immune system, and it's not really his fault, right? The other camp is saying, well, you're an athlete, right? And technically, if you're an athlete, you should treat yourself like one. it doesn't, you can't blame anyone else for these things except yourself. You should know what you're putting into your body. You should read every single label out there because everything's available to you. It isn't hidden information. So it's your fault that this stuff happened to you. So I want to know which side you two fall on. Or is this like a weird gray area? I don't know.
So for me, I mean, this was something that he only started taking in January. And if we're looking at his season last year, he had 10 shutouts and a 924 save percentage. The year before that, he had 10 shutouts and a 942 save percentage. The year before that, 4 shutouts, a 927 save percentage. He hasn't had a save percentage below 917 since he was like 15 years old. You know, this is a guy that's dominated at every level that he's played at to this point. He's 24 now, turning 25. Mistakes happen. You know, mistakes happen. And especially in an age when you're just trying to protect yourself and stay in the game to be able to, you know, keep up for your team. And obviously getting the opportunity to potentially play in the Olympics overseas is a huge opportunity for him. It's just, you know, mistakes happen.
Yeah, and just to add to that a bit, like, mistakes happened. He was able to prove that there was no way of him knowing what that, I think the actual substance called osterine, he was able to prove that he had no idea that was actually in the vitamin D supplement, that his trainer or whoever gave him that supplement, like, he there was no way of him knowing. And again, like, if it was a situation where, like, it was on the label, then maybe it's a bit of a different discussion where the athletic therapist or whoever gave him said thing is able to actually see it. But because he doesn't know he had no way of knowing unless he actually contacts the manufacturer. But again, like everything Steven said, mistakes happen. He's, like, and based on his career statistics, there's nothing that suggests that this supplement or this banned substance in this supplement drastically improved his performance. Because, like he said, he's dominated every level, like for the last, like, in recent history. So, I mean, again, like, I just don't know what you really expect Dryden McKay to do in this situation other than kind of just basically tell his truth, what he did. And I think that's a good reason why he was able to get a 6-month sanction as opposed to the longer suspension that he was going to face if he didn't.
So his attorney essentially told him that the substance, the sample that was found in his urine sample, equates to about a trillionth of a gram, which is equivalent to basically a grain of salt in a swimming pool. So theoretically, it should not provide him any performance enhancing substance. However, USADA told him that this is their release when they gave him the 6-month ban. He's responsible for what goes in his body. Okay, so
fair.
So fair. I get what you guys are saying. Like, yeah, it's hard sometimes to keep track of every single thing, right? But we see this happen all the time, right? Like, Chris Colabello, remember that?
Oh, do I ever.
And so there are so many situations that come up regarding substance abuse where I'm like, it's so hard for me to sympathize sometimes with the players because these guys, even at the NCAA level, are given world-class treatment and world-class advice for what to put in their body at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, even down to the number of cups of water you drink in a day, they're advised on what to do with that. And so a part of me is like, man, I get it, but also, I don't know.
Yeah, but I don't know. I find it... mistakes do happen. I'm sure with the Leafs and their staff, they've done their due diligence about the situation. And it was for a 10-day period. And there's a long history of this player just being absolutely dominant, playing on a really dominant team. And a lot of people maybe use that against him and say that, you know, the team in front of him has really helped him out and contributed to those numbers. But then there's a lot of scouts that are saying that, no, like, you need to watch this guy. And even though he's only 6 feet tall, which is on the shorter end for goalies, he's contributing just as much, if not more, to those numbers than the team in front of him are.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, and just to, like, make a comparison here. So, like, again, one of the more recent substance abuse, I don't say substance abuse, but, like, banned substance examples that I can think of in hockey was with Nicklas Backstrom. I think it was in 2014, the Olympics, when he played in Sochi. And I think he took a substance called pseudoephedrine, which is basically found in a lot of allergy medication. And then, so just to compare the two, like, Nicholas Backstrom, I'm assuming the athletic therapists on the, or the athletic trainers on the Swedish Olympic team, would have been able to see that whatever allergy medication contains, like, pseudoephedrine, whatever substance this is, like, it actually has the, and again, I think that's a big reason why, like, they had a Nicholas Backstrom actually had a difficult time, like, getting, like, with his appeal. Whereas, like, with Dryden, like I mentioned before, the actual, like, and I might be beating a dead horse here, but, like, the thing didn't say what was on it. Like, and again, short of contacting the manufacturer, I just don't know what to expect them to do. So again, like, in situations like Nicholas Backstrom, I'm 100% with you, Armand, in the sense that, like, it's like sometimes it's difficult to sympathize because, again, as a professional athlete, you are put in a very privileged position. You have to take on responsibilities of which don't necessarily apply to the general public. But I think even in those situations, there are some, I don't say gray area, but there's some limitations in terms of how much you can actually expect a person to do, especially when it comes to, like, health, personal health, especially when it comes to, like, COVID recovery. And given that we're still in the COVID-19 pandemic, whether we like it or not. So again, like, in this current situation, I sympathize for Dryden McKay. But again, like, when it comes to Chris Colabello and other baseball players who have tested positive for substance, like, performance enhancing drugs, that to me, that's a completely different story.
Fair enough. Okay, why don't we do this then? Because I think it's a good time to transition from a suspended player on the Leafs to an injured player on the Leafs. David, whoops, sorry about that. You may know where I'm going with this one, but basically, something happened in last night's game.
2 games ago, wasn't it?
I believe it was...
You're talking about Michael Bunting, right?
Yeah,
2 games ago.
2 games ago. Clearing attempt by Florida's Eetu Luostarinen. I want to say that's a real name. Sorry about that. Caused Bunting to fall backward. Initial reports were like, oh, okay, well, he got hit in the face with the puck, so the injury has probably to do with his face. But it wasn't the puck that caused the injury. It was more so that the way Bunting fell backward, because he had a right leg injury after that. Mm-hmm. Reports are right now that he'll come back for the playoffs, but what a blow, considering his importance to the top line. What do you think?
Yeah, it definitely is a blow. Like, I'm not going to understate the importance of Michael Bunting to this Maple Leafs team and his production, but also what he does after the whistle and how he's able to get under the skin of other teams and how many times he's put the Maple Leafs on the power play this year. Like, it almost feels like if Michael Bunting wasn't on the team, the Maple Leafs would never be on the power play because they just don't draw the calls for whatever reason. In that game against the Florida Panthers, I know that we got to see the trio of Marner, Matthews, and Nylander play together for about 8 minutes or so, and they absolutely dominated. And Nylander's been kind of floating around between playing with John Tavares and on that third line with David Kampf and Pierre Engvall. If that's something that they want to try out moving down the line, it'd be interesting. But I really like the combination of lines that they had going in last night's game against the Washington Capitals, with Mikheyev playing on a line with David Kampf and Colin Blackwell, and Nylander playing on the wing with Kerfoot and Pierre Engvall. Just because Kerfoot, Nylander, they had that chemistry together in last year's playoffs. And if they can get those two guys playing together and get the other two lines rolling, if Bunting does come back for the playoffs, I think that gives them a second or a third scoring option that can really help overwhelm teams of 5-on-5.
Yeah, like, again, like Steven said, Michael Bunting is just so valuable to this team, especially given the fact that they lost Zach Hyman in the offseason. I mean, Michael Bunting has done everything you could have asked him to do and more. I mean, like, in terms of value, like, in terms of his contract, he's probably given you more than you would have got, like, more value on that contract than you would have gotten from Zach Hyman if you were to sign him to what was being reported, like, I think 7 years at, like, 5.5, 6, 6.5, whatever the number was. So again, like, that's just the contract numbers, like, the numbers in terms of contract. But again, like, he just provides so much to this team that they don't really have. I mean, like, Armand, we've talked about Kyle Dubas like this so far so many times this season with players like Andre Kasha and David Kampf, and being able to get players who kind of complement the rest of the roster and be able to kind of fill in that bottom six when their top, like their top six is almost completely set with Nylander, Tavares, Matthews, and Marner. And having Michael Bunting there really, like, if they don't have him for the playoffs, it's going to be, I don't want to say devastating, but like, because watching them last night, Matthews and Marner did look like they're still capable players. Like, they're extremely talented even without Michael Bunting. But again, like, in terms of like who could possibly replace him, Abruzzese looked pretty good last night. I mean, he did go offside on the power play goal, which did cost the Leafs a goal, which they ended up getting back anyways later on in the game. But they just have so many options. Again, hopefully Kasha comes back before the playoffs, which doesn't really sound super optimistic, if we're being honest. But, like, I don't know. I think they have more than enough options to be able to kind of find someone to replace Michael Bunting, but it's gonna hurt if he's not there for sure. I don't think I really need to say much more than that. But
I think anytime you lose a Calder Trophy winning player, for context, by the way, Steven, I firmly believe Michael Bunting deserves the Calder Trophy award for this season, and Simon does not.
Okay, whoa.
Whoa. You're putting him on the spot again.
Okay, hold on, Steven, I know you're a big Leafs fan. I know you're probably for Michael Bunting winning the Calder. But putting that aside, who do you think is gonna win the Calder? Like, not who you think deserves. Like, who do you think will win it? That's my genuine question.
I think that Moritz Seider will win the Calder this year.
That was my pick too. Thank you, Steven. But
I would be very disappointed if Michael Bunting wasn't second or third in the voting.
Yep. I don't think there's any doubt it's going to be second or third, but I just think if you look at the work that Mo Sider's done with a terrible Detroit Red Wings team, I don't think it should be close. Just being completely honest, I think Michael Bunting's had a great season, but Mo Sider's playing with, I don't even know who, like Nick Leddy maybe? Like, I have no idea. Mark Stahl? I don't know. Like,
23 goals, 40 assists in 78 games this season, though. Just saying,
he's really, really good.
Yeah,
like, he's good. I'm not gonna say he's bad. Like, second or third is it's up there. But what we're seeing Mo Sider too. I mean, I love Bunting. I just think it's his trophy to lose.
Yeah, like with Mo Sider, we're talking about like a kid who's like 22 years old. Like, I don't know exactly how old he is. I'm pretty sure he's like early 20s, and like, I don't want to compare him to Cale Makar because, like, just no one's like Cale Makar. Cale Makar is an absolute monster. That's a generational talent in and of itself. But, like, Mo Sider is going to be a top defenseman, like, even as soon as, like, maybe next year or the year after. Might need some more time to develop a couple things, but he's going to be a number one defenseman for a Detroit team who is on the come up. And, again, I think just what he's done and the fact that how exciting that Red Wings team is, I think he's a huge part of that.
So, I'm a little disappointed you guys aren't Bunting fans as much as I am. It's okay, though. We can only really have one true fan on the podcast at once. That's all right. No hurt feelings. Anyway, the reason why I'm talking about Bunting, though, is because huge playoff implications. First of all, Matthews recently, injury scare. Bunting goes down. Kasha's on the sidelines. Campbell's been battling an injury all season. Mrazek's out right now. And if Campbell gets hurt, oh my God, what are you going to do? Like, this is a little scary, isn't it? Going to the playoffs, you got four games, three games left?
Two more.
Two games left?
Two more, yeah.
Yeah, with the worry of Jack Campbell going down again, I think we can say that about a lot of teams and their goaltending going into the playoffs. Like, if Andre Vasilevsky somehow just slipped and something happened to him, I think the Tampa Bay Lightning would be in trouble. I don't have no idea who their backup goaltender even is. So
Brian Elliott.
You can say that a lot about a lot of teams, but with the Maple Leafs and their depth, like we mentioned, Nick Abruzzese filling in on that top line with Matthews and Marner. And I know that a lot of people were calling for Nick Robertson to get another opportunity to play there. And I believe in the time that he's been down with the Toronto Marlies, he's been absolutely lighting it up. And he has been injured, and that has been a problem for him over the last little while in his career. But if you're looking at the time that he's been healthy so far in the American Hockey League this year, going back the last 10 seasons for individual years for players 20 and younger in the AHL, he's had the 13th most productive season in terms of points per game. And everyone in front of him, everyone below him, except for like two guys, basically are regular NHL contributors on their team. So for me, you could call up a guy like Nick Robertson, who in his most recent stretch of games, he was playing on the fourth line like 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes a night. And it was hard to evaluate him. But when he did get an opportunity to play with Tavares and Nylander, he kept up with the play, made some nice passing plays. And an underrated part of his game is that he's a bit of a jerk. There was that game against the Red Wings where he dumped someone into their opposing net. He threw a big hit along the boards. He's a tenacious player that gives you 110, that gives you 110% every time.
The thing is, you can't really evaluate a player when he's only at 5 or 6 minutes a night, though. Like, that's my biggest pet peeve whenever Robertson draws into the lineup, and I'm like, why? Like, yeah, I know, but, like, Robertson thrives in a goal-scoring environment where he can play, like, 15-plus minutes a night, and he can really show off his skills, right? If he's down on the fourth line, what really can he do that someone like, I don't know, Simmons, Clifford can't replace?
Yeah, he's a totally different player playing on that fourth line than what he would be playing in the top six.
Yeah, I think next year, again, especially when it pertains to Nick Robertson, again, I don't know what their plans are for him, just given that, again, he's just had such horrible injury luck. It's been awful. But I genuinely think next year, especially training camp, first couple games of the season, we're going to see him getting like a legitimate opportunity, probably on that second line on with Tavares and Nylander again, or maybe with Matthews and Marner. I assume they're going to leave Bunting, Matthews, and Marner as is, just because, like, why wouldn't you? They've been absolutely lighting it up this year. But like you said, he's a completely different player when you're putting him on like third line with Kerfoot and Engvall, and the fourth line with Simmons and Spezza. Like, and we've seen him light up the AHL. Like, he's kind of in the Kasperi Kapanen range of the AHL. Like, he's too good for the AHL. Like, you can't really send him back down there because you already, like, you know what he has. Like, you know what he is. He has an elite shot, underrated skater in my opinion, for someone of his, like, who's like he's worked with Barb Underhill. His skating has has improved greatly. But I think next year we're really going to, as much as it sucks to say, I don't think we're going to get to see him until next year in terms of prolonged NHL audition until next year. But again, we're going to have to see, because, like, we also just haven't seen him stay healthy at the NHL level for long enough to justify, like, an actual prediction in terms of when he's going to come up.
Yeah. So, lines-wise, Steven, your last YouTube video, you dedicated it to, I don't know if you posted the one you just said you shot today already on YouTube.
Haven't gotten it up yet.
All right, so the one that's live right now, you go into playoff predictions and the lineups and everything, and this is what it is from your video. We'll talk about whether or not this sticks considering recent information, but Bunting, Matthews, Marner, top line, Kerfoot, Tavares, Mikheyev, second line, Engvall, Kampf, Nylander, third line, and then Simmons, Spezza, Blackwell. Defense pairings, Riley Bush, Maz Brody, Gio Liljegren. And then extras, I guess, Sandin, Hall, Clifford, with your goalies of Supi and Chalgrin. So I'm going to leave Bunting, Matthews, Marner, because I think there's no point in debating that further. I want to, might seem counterintuitive, I want to go to the fourth line. Yeah. Simmons, Spezza, Blackwell. I think Blackwell, and Steven, I want to get your thoughts on this. I think the only player who has guaranteed that spot in the fourth line is Colin Blackwell.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's definitely a guy who could play higher up in the lineup, but last season when he was with the New York Rangers, he was on pace for 21 goals playing with Artemi Panarin and Ryan Strome, I believe. And then this year for the Seattle Kraken, I believe he was on pace for like 17 or 18 goals playing with Yanni Gourde and Cale Yarncroc for the most part. So he definitely does have a goal scoring touch to him, but with the Kraken this year, he definitely took on a bit more of a defensive role and he was producing good results for them. So whatever you need Colin Blackwell to do, if that's flying backwards into a guy for a big hit along the boards, he seems to be willing to do it. That's a really underrated addition in that Mark Giordano trade. And if he's playing with, if he's playing on that shutdown line, like we saw yesterday with Mikheyev and David Kampf, and then you want to give that third line a bit of a different look with Nylander and Kerfoot and Engvall, that's definitely something that I don't hate. There's a lot of fluid combinations and Blackwell definitely adds to that.
Yeah, I find it so hard to believe that Blackwell would ever draw out of the lineup. And just on a side, that Geo trade, first of all, now is looking like more and more of a steal every single day. Considering you got back Geo and you got Blackwell, for a few picks here and there. But underrated mention is the drastically improved play of Timothy Liljegren once Geo has been inserted into the lineup and played alongside Tim Oth, right? Like, in the trade, you have to add in that Timothy improved vastly once Gio was entered.
Yeah, and like, and you look at the market that was going for defenseman at the time. You see Florida gives up a first-round pick for Ben Sherratt, who, again, that's the big one that jumps to mind. There were a lot of big deals for defensemen at the deadline, and the Leafs were, again, a huge part of that is the fact that Gio wanted to come home. I believe he had a no trade clause, so he was fully going to be able to completely handle where, like, he was going to dictate where he was going to go. So that ended up working completely in the Leafs' favor. And like you said, he's significantly helped Timothy Liljegren develop, like, especially after the after the trade deadline, to the point where, like, I don't even think you can even think about taking Liljegren out of the lineup. But I know they did it recently to kind of help get some other guys in the lineup, but, like, man, like, if this is the Liljegren that we're going to see, like, next year, again, I'm hoping Giordano comes back, maybe on a Spezza-type deal, maybe not veterans minimum, but, like, some significant pay cut, that's going to be huge, because now, basically, you have Riley locked up, you have Liljegren, who I think is due for an extension at the end of the season, but I don't think it's going to be anything significant, and you have Gio. That's solid three, and we've talked about them hopefully bringing back Lyubushkin on some sort of low money deal, but yeah, he's been unreal, unbelievable.
The underrated thing there is that I believe it was in the 2017-2018 season, this isn't the first time that Mark Giordano has helped out a younger offensive defenseman really kind of round out and find his game and contribute to consistent play. The 2017-18 season, I believe, or maybe it was the year after or before, whichever one it was, Mark Giordano played like insane levels of competition in terms of his ice time with Dougie Hamilton, and those guys really, really thrived together, shutting down all of the other team's top lines and players. And we later found out afterwards, I believe the next season, it was Giordano and Brody that played together for the most part, that Hamilton could definitely do it on his own. But a lot of that play was with those minutes with Giordano that definitely did help him. And if we're seeing like a guy like Liljegren, since the NHL's trade deadline, in 15 games, he's got 5 points and 4 goals, but he's really taken on a different look and he's been more comfortable. And he's just, I don't know, like, there were some plays that you're looking at him and you're like, yeah, this guy's a rookie. But ever since playing with Giordano, he's a guy that has really helped him out and solidified his game.
Yeah, anytime you bring a former Norris Trophy winner into any lineup, you can see the improvement like right away. And it doesn't necessarily have to be on the points. Like, yeah, Gio, and by the way, he won the Norris in just 2019, so he's just 3 seasons removed from that. It's not even 3 full seasons, considering what COVID did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that season, 74 points, 17 goals, 57 assists. I believe he led the league in plus-minus as well. He was second in scoring at that position. But his influence, just being the dad of that group now, has really calmed things down. Like, I still, Riley, obviously, number one in terms of importance in this blue line, but I have a hard time arguing like Gio is not number two right now in terms of the most important defenseman on the Leafs right now.
The one thing that I really like about his play is that playing on the Seattle Kraken, we saw a huge dip in his offensive numbers. But if you watch him play, he's a defenseman who you could see this guy was an elite offensive defenseman at one point because he does take the puck through the middle of the ice. He does skate with it, but he's just not able to get in over the blue line to create the first pass in the offensive zone anymore. But lucky for him and the Maple Leafs, the Maple Leafs have been a very good team this year at dumping pucks in and retrieving it. And because he's able to break the puck out of his own zone and dump it in over the blue line, the Leafs are able to use that strength to their advantage to really complement his play. It's been an awesome fit on all levels for him, the team, Liljegren. And whether or not he comes back on a Jason Spezza type contract next season, I don't know, because he still is really, really good.
Yeah.
At the age of 37 or 38 years old, we saw a guy like Ryan Suter in the offseason get $3.5 million for 4 years, I believe. So the money could definitely be out there, but this is a situation that works for everyone, and he is a Toronto guy.
Yeah, like one thing that impressed me about Mark Giordano is because one thing that that came out shortly after Mark Giordano got traded is like his, like Steven said, his offensive numbers were very down, which is kind of surprising because I think as soon as you hear like former Norris Trophy winner, I think a lot of people kind of jump to the conclusion that, oh, they must be a great offensive defense, because they really, in the last couple of years, that's what the Norris has become. It's just whichever defenseman scores the most points, or at least that's what it's felt like. But again, like if you look at his underlying number, like his underlying defensive numbers, like they've been like, sorry, at the time of the trade, they were unbelievable. But again, his level of play with the Maple Leafs has made that look even, sorry, I'd be curious to know what they are now. I don't know. I'm not sitting of them in front of me, but I would imagine to be a lot higher, which is kind of surprising because again, I don't really imagine Mark Giordano was this great kind of defenseman, but here he is. Like and I think it's been such a nice fit because he does so many things that the Leafs don't do well. Like we saw when Muzzin got hurt, like they just don't have that guy who can kind of clear the front of the net. And Giordano does that so well and so efficiently. And again, you can move him up and down the fence, move him up and down if you really need to. He has chemistry with TJ Brody with this when they played together in Calgary. He's looked really good with Timothy Liljegren on that third pair. And again, I don't really think there's any real shot he moves up with Morgan Rielly just because you don't really need him to, but like, and if you need him to, he's played top pair minutes before, so you could probably move him up there if he wants to. Like, it's just been such an, like Steven said, it's been such a nice fit for all parties involved that, again, I am choosing to be optimistic to the point where I don't know how realistic it is that he's going to come back at a discounted contract, but again, who really knows? But yeah, I guess we'll see.
And the thing that makes him so effective defensively still, even at the age of 37, 38 years old, even though he's slowed down, is that he anticipates plays so well that he gets on top of you before you even get the puck. And he is willing to give up the blue line to keep you to the outside off the rush. And that's just something that the Maple Leafs really need. And in 18 games so far, he's got 11 points. Right. And that would put him on pace for 50 points in an 82 game season. So that offense has really come back, and you're seeing the Mark Giordano of old.
Yeah. So then my question is this, considering you got these defense pairings, Rielly, Bush, Muzz, Brody, Gio, Liljegren, I don't want Sheldon Keefe to keep tinkering with this lineup anymore. If there's only 2 games left, this is my biggest gripe from last season, by the way, even in the playoffs, I think we all remember swapping out Sandin and Liljegren a couple times during the series against Montreal.
And Dermott. Dermott, too.
Sorry, did I say Liljegren? I meant Sandin and Dermott.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Sandin... Oh, yeah. Oh, Sandin and Dermott. I don't think Liljegren really got any time. Like, I mean, he might have gotten, but anyway, Sandin... Yeah, but anyways, so continue.
So Sandin and Dermott. And my biggest thing was, come on, man. Like, you're in the playoffs. Like, nothing is ever guaranteed. Like, you're not going to... It's not 100% guaranteed you're going to win any series or any game, let alone. So why don't you just go in and just stick with this one damn roster the entire way through? Don't change it. Like, stop it. Stop it. Don't touch your scar. Like, don't touch your wound. And over the last few games, he has been doing that a little bit. And I just want him to stop. I just want him, 2 games left, just set up your roster now. And... whether or not you want to sit a game, a player for a game before the playoffs, sure. But once the playoffs begin, I don't want anything changed. I don't want any player in or out unless it's for injury.
When the playoffs start, I really want the defensive pairings to be Morgan Rielly, Ilya Lyubushkin, Mark Giordano, TJ Brody. And if Rasmus Sandin is able to make his return, I would really like to see Sandin and Liljegren play together. It's not that I haven't liked Liljegren and Giordano. There are some really good options there. It's just that if Jake Muzzin, he came back, he was good. There's something else there. Like the last time I saw him skate, he looked really lame at practice. Like he just wasn't able to give it.
Yeah. The Dave Alter video. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. He's, for me, it was worth a shot. I would have really liked him to have seen the Maple Leafs stash him on LTIR and go out and get another forward at the deadline.
Yep.
And looking back on that, that seems like an area where if you're looking back on it, that seems like you would have really wanted them to have done that. It's hurting.
That $6 million would have looked real nice, like, or 5.8, whatever the number is. So, Steven, this is something me and Armand have talked about recently. So, like you said, Jake Muzzin hasn't looked the same, especially recently. Maybe he's had, like Nick Roberts, he's just had really bad, really unlucky injury. He's had a really bad season this year just with injuries. Like the play in Montreal, complete fluke accident, ends up with another concussion, and is out for, I can't remember how long, he's out for an extended period. Me and Armand have talked about recently about maybe moving on from Jake Muzzin. Again, if you were to move on from him, you'd be moving a depreciated asset. You probably would just be moving him for the sake of moving out the cap hit. But again, at this point where the Leafs are at, I don't really think that's a problem. I don't really think that's a problem for them. Like, even if the Leafs have a great playoffs, which again is yet to be seen, I'm not going to sit here and say like they're going to plow through Tampa Bay or whoever they play in the first round. But even if they do well, and would you, like, knowing what you know, and like again being someone who's all about the numbers, where would you be potentially on moving Jake Muzzin and just to get maybe someone like Sandy in a spot in the lineup? Because the way it is right now with all the players they have, it's difficult to find space with them with all the players that they currently have.
I don't think Jake Muzzin is going to be traded. I think if he's not healthy, they'll keep him on LTIR and hopefully not make that mistake again. I think it's very unlikely that he starts the season healthy for the Maple Leafs next year. I think that if he's not able to come back from what he is right now, I think that they opt to just go for the obvious surgeries or whatever it is that is ailing him physically. Obviously, you can't understate the mental aspect of the concussions. Even he spoke about it after he suffered the first one when he came back and he was playing a game against the Seattle Kraken. He went in for a hit along the boards for Mason Appleton. And it was a real awkward collision where he fell really hard on his arm and he had to leave that game. And people were like, oh boy, he just came back from the first concussion and now he's got like a broken arm or something. But he was able to come back and he was okay. But he talked about it post game saying that he was hesitant to lay that hit. And in order to be effective, Jake Muzzin needs to be confident in playing a physical game. So it's not so much, it's the mental aspect, it's the physical aspect of it. If he can't be confident in playing a physical game, you're going to leave yourself open to being hurt more physically because you're going to be involved in awkward plays like that. And if he can't stay healthy physically, that's not going to help with the mental state of things either, even if the concussions are something that's past him. I know that while he was out with the second concussion, there were some rumors going around that he did have some talks with his family about his life after hockey and what he wants that to be. It's you want to be optimistic about it. If he's healthy, he plays because he is still good. Like in the stretch where he came back from the second concussion, he was able to be a contributor while playing away from Justin Hall. And it was unfortunate to see that David Alter video where he was kind of skating around a little bit lame on the one leg. But I really don't know. what the Maple Leafs have done is that they've created a scenario for themselves where they don't need to rely upon him in these playoffs. If he's healthy, great. If he's not, we'll move on to plan B, right? In the in the last couple of years, when Jake Muzzin's gone down, it's been Martin Marincin and Travis Dermott playing in the top four.
Yeah.
And this year, Jake Muzzin's hurt, and you still have Riley Labushkin, Giordano Brody, and Sandin Timothy Liljegren is still fantastic, and Justin Hall is your extra guy. Right. Yeah. Right, you still have seven guys. Would be nice to have the eighth guy in there because you're gonna need that for the playoff depth. But
Hall,
yeah, it's just it's unfortunate.
So, my biggest thing is I was talking about this to Simon over the last couple months, saying this is before Giordano got traded to the Maple Leafs. Like, you need someone in case Riley or Brody or Muzzin are injured. One of them is injured in the playoffs. Doesn't matter when. Who the hell is gonna step up and take their place? Like, who can really replace what they bring? And the answer at the time was no one. Like, no one's going to replace Riley or Brody or Muzzin. Now you have someone in Giordano who could step in and replace, maybe not Riley, but probably more so along the likes of what Muzzin or Brody bring, maybe in between them. And then with Liljegren stepping up, now you have more options, right? But then my question is, if... how many injuries has Muzzin had this season? Two or three?
I think this would be the third, I believe.
Yeah.
So, third. Why didn't they just Kucherov him?
That's a great question.
If he was able to come back, because, you know, you see his play at the beginning of the season, and he did kind of look a little bit wonky. He was a lot slower than when he was last year. There was not really any chemistry between him and Justin Hall anymore. You had to think that there was something bothering him then already coming into this year. And if you're looking at the injury history, he gets injured in the series against the Montreal Canadiens with a lower body injury. In the series against the Blue Jackets, he's stretchered off, and that wasn't his fault. He was cross-checked by Pierre-Luc Dubois, I believe. In the series, when they first acquired him against the Boston Bruins, he was sick, and then he had a shoulder problem, I believe, going into that series.
Oh, man. Wow.
It's just every single season there's been something. So you're right when you say that they really needed a contingency plan. They really needed something to back them up there. But I think that having Giordano, like you said, knowing what Timothy Liljegren can do when paired with the right guy, and Rasmus Sandin as well, when Jake Muzzin went down the first time. Like, we haven't seen Rasmus Sandin play in like a month and a half or something like that. I think a lot of people are forgetting how good this guy is.
And
but he was finally ready to take a step to play more than just the third pair role. There is depth here.
I would prefer if they don't touch Sandin, to be completely honest with you. I know a lot of people won't like that, and you yourself said you'd prefer to see Sandin play. But look, like I said, I'm so risk averse right now on this team that I don't want any changes in chemistry whatsoever. Like, just stick with this.
Yeah, like, I guess the thing for me is, like, with Sandin, like, it was reported that he sustained a knee injury. I think he was playing the Nashville Predators. I can't really remember 100%. But if that is that ACL that he, I think he tore earlier, like, earlier in his career, I don't know, man. Like, sorry, I'm just squeamish about the whole thing. Because, again, ACL injuries are so serious. And, again, sports medicine continues to evolve to the point where, like, nowadays, like, ACL tears don't really feel like they're all that severe because, again, thank God for, like, for all the great sports surgeons and everything we have around the game. But when you're dealing with a defenseman that's that young and who relies so much on his skating, I think, again, like Stevens, if he's able to play and he's able and they're and, like, he's completely healthy, great. Put him in. I have no problem with that. But if it's a situation where he's going to be forcing himself to kind of get back into line just for the sake of wanting to contribute, like, again, like, because that's for the most part what the athlete stereotype is. Get back out there, unless you're Ben Simmons. But, like, get back out there, continue to help your team. I don't really want him touching the lineup, man. Like, I don't want him I don't want him hurting his knee again. Because, again, we've seen, and it's playoff hockey. We've seen the last couple games, especially last game with the Tampa Bay Lightning, with Kucherov going out and kneeing Mitch Marner, Patrick Maroux, and Corey Perry. Again, assuming the Leafs play the Lightning in the first round, that's going to be a physical series. And if Rasmus Sandin's going to be in the middle of it, I'm not going to be comfortable for a good chunk of the series, man. At least not until it's over.
The my biggest 180 that happened to me in the last week was, I was like, yeah, you know what? I think of all the possible playoff matchups that the Leafs have on the horizon. Yeah, they got probably Tampa or Florida or Boston or Carolina. Tampa, lock and loaded. I want them, 100%. And then that game happened. And then I'm like, you know what? I don't know anymore. I just, everywhere you look is a monster.
Like that game, I talked about it in my video, and I think if you're talking about the Maple Leafs and their play the last little while, something to keep in mind is that in this month of April, and they mentioned it on the broadcast, that a lot of teams are dealing with a very, very condensed schedule. And if you're comparing the Leafs schedule to Florida or Tampa Bay, both Florida and Tampa Bay and the Leafs, Florida's played 12 games in the last 24 days. The Lightning have played 13 in the last 24 days. Toronto's played 13 in the last 24 days. So all very similar there. But in terms of back-to-back situations, while the Panthers have played less games, they've had three back-to-back scenarios. The Lightning have had one. The Leafs have had three. So the Leafs have played the most games in April, and they've had the most back-to-back scenarios of any of those teams. But if you're looking at the games that have been on the road, the Leafs have played 8 out of 13 of those games on the road so far this month. The Tampa Bay Lightning have played 3 out of 13 on the road, and the Panthers have played 5 out of 12 on the road. So if you're looking, there's been a lot of travel this month. There's been a lot of games. There's been a lot of back-to-back scenarios. I think they were due for, like, obviously, like you never want to lose embarrassingly like that. Like, they got destroyed 8-1 in that game. But no Matthews, no Muzzin, no Liljegren, I believe, didn't play in that game. Jack Campbell wasn't in net either. It's hard to look at that game and say, yeah, that's what the Maple Leafs are when they were missing so many key components of their lineup. But then again, you know, you can't lean on Jake Muzzin in that series anyway. But no Matthews, no Campbell. And they just beat them 6-2 on home ice just a couple of weeks ago. I think that game is what it is. It's not nothing, but it's not indicative of how the series is going to go.
So that's the most confusing part for me, because I don't know which team, like, of the two games that the Leafs played against the Lightning, the 6-2 game versus the 8-1 game, which is the real Leafs team? Yeah, there were a lot of players out versus the Lightning in this just recent game, but the Lightning also looked incredible.
Well, it's probably going to be somewhere in the middle, right? Because, again, we saw, the 6-2 game against Tampa Bay. Like, Tampa just looked, they looked gassed. And Elliot Friedman pointed that out, I think, during, like, after the game, on their post game. The Tampa Bay Lightning just look absolutely gassed. It's something that we've talked about is, like, they've played a lot of hockey. Like, they've, I think, you look back at their record of seasons, like, this is a team that is consistently either in the Stanley Cup final, the conference final. They did miss the playoffs the 1 year just because, like, I think they had every single, almost every single player was hurt except for Braden Point, which I think that was his coming out party. But, like, I think the reality is you're not going to get a team that looked. I think in terms of the Leafs team you're going to be getting, I don't think you're probably looking at somewhere in the middle. Not quite as good as a 6-2 team, but also not quite as gassed or dead as they looked in the 8-1 game. And the same thing with Tampa Bay. Probably not as great as you saw in 8-1, but also not as horrible as you saw at 6-2. So I think it's probably somewhere in the middle, like, if you're looking at both teams.
Yeah, and I mean, they're currently on a 6-game win streak right now, but those games have been at home, and the game that they won against the Panthers the night before, where it was 8-4, it's in the same state, at least, so there's not as many travel. Like I said, 3 out of their 13 games so far this year, or there are 3 out of 13 games in April have been on the road, so 10 out of 13 have been at home. They've had a bit of an easier schedule, and they've been more comfortable at home, and it's probably something in between.
I'm gonna, the reason why I was bringing up Tampa was because just yesterday, all 8 teams in the NHL's Eastern Conference cracked 100 points.
That's fucked. Like, that's actually wild.
That's stupid. And it's the first time in NHL history this has ever happened. Which is why I was saying, any time, like, any playoff prediction you make, you have to consider the entire East, playoff-wise, is crazy. Anywhere you look, it's going to be a monster. Like, do you want Boston? Oh my God. You want Tampa? Carolina? Florida? Like, none of those are easy. So
I'll take one Washington, please.
Yeah, like the Capitals have 100 points this year, but without John Tavares, Timothy Liljegren, or Jack Campbell, the Maple Leafs dispatched them quite handedly, playing their third game and their fourth day.
Yeah.
So, the Washington guy, even though Obi left the game early, but they don't scare me, even though they got 100 points.
Yeah. Yeah, so Steven, last time we recorded, I think the Leafs had, like, I don't want to say a real chance, but they had, like, really maybe three or four legitimate potential opponents, like the Hurricanes, the Bruins, the Lightning, and, like, God forbid the Panthers if they had some just complete, like, drop off the face of the earth and, like, the Capitals went on some type of run. But if, like, in your perfect world between, like, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, the Bruins, and the Lightning, who would you think the Leafs would match up best against, and like who would you like want them to face if you could have your pick in the first round?
Well, I know so there's two parts to this answer. That the Leafs have been accused of being a one-line team at times this year, with that second line of John Tavares and William Nylander kind of struggling. But if you're looking at the big bad Bruins, they had to split up the perfection line in order to create two scoring lines for themselves, because they lost David Krejci in the offseason. They didn't really replace him down the middle. It's not the same team. And if you're looking at their blue line, they have been a very good defensive team this year in terms of the scoring opportunities, the expected goal numbers, the actual goal numbers. Their goaltending has been good as well. You know, you're talking about the Leafs getting goalied a lot. The Boston Bruins, they're not that high flying offensive team. They're kind of middle of the pack, like towards the bottom end of contenders in terms of their offense this year. I think the Leafs would do well in a series against the Boston Bruins just because they're not that big bad Bruins team anymore. There's so many guys that have moved on. But the Tampa Bay Lightning, we saw a level of physicality from them that I don't think a lot of people were expecting, but the Leafs have done a decent job at matching that ever since like the beginning of March, where they had a stretch of like four or five games in a row where they threw 30 plus hits. And that's not anything. That's something that hasn't happened since they drafted Austin Matthews. And, you know, to see them get involved in that physical play in that game, even though they lost 8-1, they didn't get bullied. Right. Yeah. They lost 8-1, but they didn't get bullied, if that makes sense. I think that they could match up against the Lightning well in a 7-game series. The only part of that I don't like is Jack Campbell versus Andrei Vasilevskiy.
Yep.
But the Leafs have done a decent job getting to him this year, you know, in that 62 games, in the game that they played against them previously. They've done a good job. I think that they, and especially where they carved them up the most in that 62 game, was in the middle of the ice and off the rush. They did whatever they want with the puck going over Tampa's blue line. And that's something that the Maple Leafs have put an extra emphasis on this year. Like I said, they're a really good dump and chase team. They can recover pucks and dumping it in. They can carry it over the blue line. They can create offense in multiple ways this year. And that's something, that's an area of their game that Sheldon Keefe made a point to point out in the Amazon All or Nothing series, where this team needs to be better with the less time and space, against better defensive teams. And that's something that I think that they've accomplished this year.
Let's see if the other quote from the All or Nothing series gets answered this year. Demons in their closet, demons in their car, under their bed, everywhere. Let's see if that gets answered. I don't know. We'll find out. Regarding the playoff matchups, it's probably going to be, at this point, Toronto-Tampa, considering the discrepancy in points.
Yeah.
If, however, the playoff structure remained 1-8 instead of the wild card weirdness that they implemented like 8-9 seasons ago, it would have been Toronto versus Boston. And in my opinion, I also believe that they would have matched up really well against Boston. And I want that.
Another very good defensive team that they absolutely carved the last time they played them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They just did whatever they wanted, basically, in the offensive zone.
Yeah. Any path to the Leafs doing well in the playoffs that doesn't involve Boston just wouldn't feel right. I need that for my soul. Like, my God. Oh, my Lord.
And really quick check on the Shane Wright lottery. Montreal has lost 9 in a row. So they are.
Have they actually?
Back to number one.
Shane Wright. My goodness. Yeah. I remember when there was that brief Cole Caulfield's better than Austin Matthews discourse in that small city in Quebec. But yeah, no, that's. No.
Yeah, no, we're not talking about that. Anyway, I think that's all we had to talk about for today. Steven, any parting words? Plug yourself.
You can find my work at theleafsnation.com and all of their socials. And you can also find me on YouTube at Downtown Sports. I don't know if you'll see me at TSN. I'm going to be like a secondary tertiary role. But I'll be around.
Sick. Yeah. Also, one more, Steven, before we go, there's only one real candidate for the Hart Trophy this year, right? There's only one.
Yes. There's only one. This debate's been over for like a month and a half now.
And it's Igor Numjin.
Especially like my whole thing is that when Matthews is getting closer and closer to 60, I tweeted it out. There's only been two players since 1999-2000 that have hit 60 goals, and that's Stamkos and Ovechkin. And I know scoring is up this year, but if Matthews hits that feat, he's on a different level. And if you're looking at his defensive play this year, he's improved tremendously there as well. Yeah. And it's just like I've seen goals that he's been a part of where he's picked up an assist or he's been the guy that puts it in where he's the first guy in on the forecheck. Yeah. And it's like that's something that we weren't seeing as much from him in years past, but we're seeing that now. And I think they're playing a little bit pissed off. And I think that's what we need to see from the Leafs in the playoffs. Just play mad, play pissed off. This is yours to lose. Just go out there and do it.
What's unfortunate is we were discussing so much about whether Austin's he could hit 65 or even 70 goals. Unfortunately, he might not even hit 60 at this point.
Hey, he can do it. Stop it.
He can. They're playing the Red Wings tomorrow. There might be
okay. We're fine.
There might be another 10-7 game on the horizon.
Oh, good, good, good.
Anyway, thanks so much, Steven. We love to have you back. We're a growing podcast, so. It was an honor having you on. Thanks so much. That's it.
Yeah. It was awesome, guys. The pleasure is mine.